KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
I'm not, you know, living in the dream world where I think it's going to create or take away all the guns out of all the felons' hands, but it will help, and that's what we have to do.
We believe that the best personalized newspaper should have a broad diversity of content. It should have high-quality public content from world-renowned sources, and it should also have socially and locally relevant updates from family, friends, and the people around you.
Because I sat with him for 2 days, and the one thing he asked me to give Obama something to say and do one thing. He wants Obama to do one thing. Call him.
That was Representative Mike Hope talking about a bill that would require universal background checks. We're going to check in with what's happening in Olympia in about 20 minutes. Mark Zuckerberg talking about the Facebook redesign and Dennis Rodman on his visit to North Korea. A couple of the topics we'll take up in our chat room. Now, Bernard, I was gone 2 weeks. I forgot the other German word we had for it.
Stammtisch.
Stammtisch. Or coffee klatch. But you like the Stammtisch.
I prefer Stammtisch. Stammtisch.
I like a little Stammtisch with my coffee. And that's coming up later. But we start with Ron Sims, who is the former King County executive from 95 to 2009. Before that, he was just about 10 years on the King County Council. He also served as deputy secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development from 2009 to 2011. I'm just jumping right in. I will say thank you. It's nice to see you.
It's always good being on KUOW.
And now I'm just jumping right in. Here was this poll that came out last week that said that if Ron Sims ran for mayor, he and Mike McGinn would be about at 15%. But Ron Sims has not declared for running for mayor. Is Ron Sims running? Are you running for mayor?
Let's talk about some issues first.
No, you're going to dangle before us?
You know, it's interesting.
I was going to say, why would you run for mayor?
I have been on this wonderful sabbatical. I have been on this wonderful sabbatical, which allows you to actually be detached, I think, from and be more an observer. No stake in it. You're rested. You're relaxed.
And, I remember dealing with you for 25 years. You don't answer my questions.
And but I have a high regard for you over those last 25 years, which is why I've decided to come onto this show. But I think that let me kind of tell you what I think I would like to see in Seattle. One is I'd like to some. We need some vision. You know, right now, if you look at the news or you watch the news, we're being defined by some very narrow issues, which is, you know, the police reform, which is big, but it's not the only issue. I've always said that if I call 911, the officer that responds to my home is likely 99.9% of the time to be a highly professional, competent officer who wants to serve. There are people who need to be gone and need a structure to make sure that they are. But overall, I think all of us realize that we have one of the better police forces in the country because I have been to other places where they're far more challenging than the officers here. These are some good officers. Where we locate a stadium or whether we have a stadium, and I've worked on two of those issues, the King Dome Stadium and the Mariner Stadium, and feel very, very good about them, but they don't define a community. They're entertainment venues. More people go to the arts than go to sports, which is really fascinating in this region. But the real issue to me is what is a great city and how do you get to be a great city? And that discussion is not on the table. If you look at what really impacts a great city, it's great schools. And whether or not you have direct jurisdiction over them or not, the mayor actually has an incredible bully pulpit political and financial influence over schools. And our schools, if you look at them, people say, are they good? And I said, no, they're not great. I was in a meeting at the University of Washington looking at great schools all over the world. Great schools don't test their teachers. It's a waste of money. So I want to give a big shout out to the teachers at Garfield who are protesting these MAP tests on teachers because they have showed not to be of much value. You're testing the ability of a teacher to influence 20 to 40% of a learning environment. The rest is outside of it, and that's widely known. They're not going to make your kids smarter because I like great schools. But you have within them the school district, international schools, which are phenomenal. The kids in those schools test way above the rest of the elementary and middle schools in the system. It's language immersion, and it seems to me we should have our international schools as a common format. And if I were the mayor, I would be campaigning to say we're going to have world-class schools. We're going to operate as a world-class schools. That attracts investment. It attracts technology companies. It attracts the future who will locate here. It attracts the families who work in those industries. And we simply can no longer simply say that you have the city on one side of the river and you have the schools on another side.
The bully pulpit.
And
the bully pulpit gets you that?
Oh, the bully pulpit is a political pulpit, and they get you there. I don't care whether you are a mayor. You know, you have mayors that actually control them and mayors who actually can influence them. But you've never seen a mayor basically keep an arm's length distance. They don't. They immerse themselves in school outcomes because they are so defining. As go your schools, as goes your community. You want to reduce crime. Have great schools. You want to make sure that we're not a society that is stratified by race and economics. You have great schools. You want a school for the 21st century. You make sure that any kid graduating from a Seattle public school will speak a language other than their native language because the world requires people to be bilingual. Then they say, well, poor kids can't speak another language. All over the world, poor kids speak
one
language. So what happens is that Seattle has to make a decision as a city that if it wants to be a great city, it must have, and it must have now, great schools. It can no longer say, we're going to have our educational levy and try to influence it. No. What they have to say is there's an expectation for how the schools will look and how they will feel. They also have to embrace the business community that wants the same thing.
Wait,
and you can't
you
have the business community on one side and the city on the other.
Right. So what mayor in another city with the same kind of power as the mayor of Seattle has done what you're talking about?
I think you're beginning to see them. I think you're beginning to look at the governmental leaders in Portland. You've seen that in beginning in Sacramento, Austin, Texas. I think you're beginning to see that emerge. The Miami-Dade has a number of different schools, and they made a decision to be the most, as they would say to themselves, they want to be the hub, the place where they can show Latino glory at its best. They want to be a technology hub, not a place where people go to retire or, as they used to say, go to die. So they're doing phenomenal work there. So, you know, we're not without it. The issue, though, is to, you know, we can, if we choose, really be very aggressive at changing the schools. But it requires a coalition of foundations and the business community and the political community, and nobody can lead that more than a mayor can.
All right. You know about the discipline report that came out that said that the minority students, students of color, were more apt to be disciplined and have a harsher punishment.
Yeah.
So track me how a mayor deals with that issue.
No, the mayor can do that by having intervention services. And that's been done in other places. You have
you
can negotiate with the county executive regarding the there's a mental health levy that we have to fund the mental health system, and basically is how do you negotiate with the county executive at making sure that at any given point in time that both the teacher can cool off the situation but the family needs immediate intervention, which is done in most of the world. So there are solutions to do that. But what I would tell you is that you also have to look at foundations and you have to look at the business community and say, what are we going to put our money on? Right now, everybody's putting money on charter schools. But remember what charter schools' underlying philosophy is that if you have 3,000 kids, they'll do well with 300, but the others will not benefit because it's a lottery system. You can't have a lotterized education and talk about profound social change. You need it at a wider scale. And I think, and people like to say we can't do things, which really bothers me because You know, I remember giving a speech saying we were going to save 100,000 acres of forest, and my staff said, what? We saved 182,000 acres of forest in perpetuity. You know, you can do when you resolve to get things done. I was told that I had to build a third jail in King County and a second youth detention facility. I remember the meetings, the judges, the prosecutors, the defenders, everybody, the counsel. And I said, you build it, we'll fill it. Interestingly enough, when I was at HUD, the White House had a meeting regarding jails and how to lower prison. The example they used was King County because King County had so dramatically lowered youth detention detentions and adult detentions and had a really low crime rate on the count of it. And they were saying, why aren't we doing many of the things that King County does with intervention strategies, mental health, alcohol and drug, and education? So, you know, the impossible must be achievable, can be achievable. But what you have is a political environment which assumes that those cannot be resolved. And my argument is that you can make schools the best in the world, and they should be.
All right. I'm just speaking to that issue again of intervention. And Marie wrote us a couple of emails. She's, I believe, MSWC, means she's a master of social work. City of Seattle hires family support workers to serve our children in schools. There's your money. They have been shown not to be as effective as hoped, and there was discussion of bringing in professionals. How about hiring certified school social workers?
Yeah.
Now, there's a very concrete idea.
Yeah.
Can the city do that?
That's what the mental health system does. I don't know what the family support workers are, but the mental health workers are people who are well-trained and well-educated to do significant intervention. When a kid acts up in schools, there are a series of behavioral problems at home. And in their lives, and it's been shown that around the world that if you get on those very quickly, not make an appointment, but immediate intervention, that works. So I would agree with Marie.
All right, Ron Sims, you know, we don't do hour-long anymore. Everything's like this now on the radio. So, all right, you're not talking about running for Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction.
No,
and
I'm
you don't
about
want to be Department of Education head. There are people saying Ron Sims should run for mayor of Seattle. Are you going to run for mayor of Seattle?
I'm going to say that in just a minute. I'm going to tell you, though, that you can't, the idea that you have, I'm telling you, if a mayor wants a great city, you have great schools.
Well, you said business community then.
You know, to me, the business community has to be a partner, has to be the foundation. But if you want, a mayor leads. And this idea of siloing your leadership gives you bad results.
Who does that?
That's what we do right now. We do it often, which is why if you look at Rainier Beach and the South End schools, Rainier Beach High School has over 1,000 vacancies, and the people have made their decision in that neighborhood to send their kids elsewhere. If you want great schools and great outcomes, if you don't want a stratified society, my God, you get in as a mayor and you lead. We don't have a vision.
What would you do
if
in Rainier, what would you do in Rainier Beach?
Oh, I'd redevelop Rainier Beach. My God, it screams out for it. The high school?
Is that what you mean?
I would make that an international school. I'd make all the schools an international school.
Oh, you were saying you'd redevelop the neighborhood.
I'd redevelop the neighborhood and make Rainier Beach High School international school, along with all the other schools. You need international schools. They work incredibly well. But if we continue to silo, if we continue to say that the mayor has no role in that, we will, 20 years from now, we'll have the same results that we have today. And the issue is, why didn't we do something different? And that's what mayors do, something different. They lead. They don't say, that's not my problem. They say, that's our problem. We all live in the city. We need to have to make sure that you have a policy and a vision at the mayoralty level that all of a sudden says we will be a great city and all the things that we touch will be a great city.
Doesn't the current mayor try to lead in the schools by supporting the family and education levy, by working on getting social
workers in schools? Family education levy was born when I was on the county council with a guy named Steve Miller who went over and said, why don't we use the family education levy to do what schools cannot do financially, train teachers, teacher training, all these things that we can do legally. It morphed itself into something dramatically different than Steve Miller's original vision. And he was the attorney for the county council who actually said, why don't we do it this way? So I would go back and say to you that if you go back to what I think was the original context that Steve Miller, who was an attorney, later on went to League of Women Voters, is now a major immigration attorney in this community, said it should look like we would have much different results today. So no, I would argue that it's more of a social work, social support, and what you really need to do is drive. You want to end poverty, give me a well-educated student, give them a well-educated future. They're able to overcome a lot of barriers if your schools are effectively working.
Well,
that's been proven all over the world. Alberta, Canada schools are better than ours. Alberta candidates.
If your pre-K system is intact, if your prenatal to third grade is strong, you have that. Why not put your concentration there?
Well, because if you have kids going into your international schools, they start at kindergarten, they go all the way up. You can't cut it off at a given age. One to three is critical. Birth to five.
Yeah,
as we used to
let's
say.
Talk about birth to five.
Yeah,
or
we
even
have birth to five. Programs.
Serving, they don't. They obviously are not serving.
No, because,
and meeting everybody.
Oh come on, schools have to work. I keep telling. I mean, you have to have strong schools. They can not only enhance, but they can repair.
Okay, but the mayor doesn't just do schools. The mayor also has to do with the business community.
The mayor has to work
traffic,
with the business
community,
traffic, police, parks, playgrounds, development. You have to do all those things. But the fundamental thing that brings cities down every time are when you have large areas of people who have no more hope, and that is occurring, and it's began to occur all over the nation. But mayors who have decided to change that scenario have said, why don't we look at those communities and do something dramatically different? And they always start with the schools.
So you think the mayor is where this starts?
I think the mayor is a political leadership. You have to do the day-to-day. Seattle hasn't been reorganized in so many years, so it has kind of a Byzantine way of doing business, and everybody in it knows it. It's certainly true, everybody knows that. So you have to reorganize it. Seattle's going to be engaged in a substantial amount of construction for the next 4 years, whether the mayor likes it or not. So you can't all of a sudden say, let's go to all these different places where we want to build systems and tax people for it, when in fact you're going to have a really strong system of managing construction. So the city's going to have its handfuls. So the issue is, what would you do when you have to do all of that, and the very next thing you have to do, in my opinion, if you want a great city, a great one, is to have great schools. You can't have people in neighborhoods saying, I'm going to put my kids in the private schools because they do better, or charter schools because they do better. You would want to be able to say, the line to get into a public schools, and the international schools here are so great, and they're public schools and they're neighborhood schools. They work so incredibly well, and they're transformative for every racial group and every income group.
You're going to run into let's just pretend for a moment that you're going to tell us something in a few moments. You would run into every school board member and superintendent and interest group in the city in different schools saying, you're the mayor, you're not the school superintendent.
That's correct. That's why mayors lead, and that's what mayors do. Mayors raise these issues, and they organize these issues for change.
Down to Rainier Beach and stand
in the end, you want great schools, because great schools are what nurture a community so that everybody can compete. We're talking about whether or not we're going to have the population that will allow us to sustain ourselves into the 21st century. And you can't do that doing what we're doing today.
But you're going to get buffeted by all that stuff, shootings and police issues and whether you're going to get a basketball arena here. You get buffeted by all those things.
Yeah.
How do you keep your eye on
school? I've
been
down that path before. You always do that. Everybody's been down that path before. I've been down it. You know, we changed the healthcare system for the county. And our own employee group, and went outside and organized the Puget Health Alliance, which is doing incredible work in healthcare. The great secret, but it is doing incredible work. What a mayor does is leads, and you find people and you hire people who can bring a broad context, but you need to lead. Mayor Bloomberg is not shy, and if he was sitting here, he would be much more.
He would not let us drink a big cup of coffee with sugar in it.
But Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg, Rahm Emanuel, you look at Landro and New Orleans, you look at the mayor of Austin, you look at the mayor of Dallas, you look at what they're doing in Miami. You begin to see the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, Mayor Nutter. We don't lack some really outstanding mayors who are being innovative and imaginative, who see their job as both to manage the government and to lead their communities.
All right, well, if Ron Sims were to run for mayor, I'm just going to keep doing this to you, you would get hit by statements that said during Ron Sims's tenure at the county had real budget problems and he did not keep his eye on the ball.
Excuse me. King County had a AAA credit rating. It had adequate reserves. They still have a credit rating and adequate reserves. And so for people to say it was mismanaged is absolutely unfounded.
Well, your friend Dow Constantine has had to deal with all sorts of economic issues.
Oh, my God. We went into a recession, and they had reserves to pay for it, and they didn't lose their AAA credit rating. Excuse me. A lot of governments had a much more challenging issue. So to go into a recession recession and say, my God, we had to make some cuts, but we did have reserves, and they kept their rating. That means they got through it. You name a jurisdiction that didn't have that problem, and King County went through it better than most jurisdictions, and they did it without having an income tax base.
And you say that's through your management?
Oh, we manage the government well. There's always somebody going to say, well, I mean, the idea of financially mismanaged, if anything, I think would be accused of being too cautious. It was once a chart talking about revenues as against expenditures. And we did better than anybody else because we didn't overexpend, and we were always trying to measure down. But if you looked at King County, which does not have the taxes that Seattle has, no, we did incredibly, incredibly well. I think people envied in many respects how we managed the county, how we got through the county, and its credit rating. Ron, that unchanged. But if you're going to ask me, which would you want to do?
I'm first going to say Ron Sims is former King County executive. He was deputy secretary at HUD. And he is in our studios, and now my time is up. Ron Sims, are you running for mayor of Seattle?
I think that my wife and I have heeded the advice of two of our close friends. One of our friends being Blair Butterworth, who said, wow, you went from a county council member who nobody thought could get elected to being asked by the president of the United States to work for him. He said, that is one heck of a run. And the other one would be a friend of mine, ours, Moore Bruger, who's known me for a long time, helped engineer along with Laurie McKay my appointment to the county executive spot, who said, you'd be a really great mayor, but the issue is, are there things out there that you really want to do? And the answer is, there are other mountains I want to climb. And my wife and I want to climb them together. And maybe it's some crazy village on a mountain where you're just going to dig wells for clean water or deal with disease control. But I think that she and I want to be on another mountain, on another journey, doing things that are far more important to us. But I want this to be a great city. I really do. And the issues I raise, I think, will guide the city. And I'm going to use those forums again and again and again. But the answer to your question is no. My wife and I have decided that after 25 years and one heck of a run, according to Blair Butterworth, one heck of a run, no, it would be an honor to be a mayor, but somebody else is going to have to be mayor because I am not going to run for mayor.
Ron Sims, thank you. This is Weekday.
Well, you heard it here first. Ron Sims not running for mayor of Seattle. It's 10:27, 48 degrees in Seattle, mostly cloudy. Looking at a chance of rain today and a high of 52.
Support for KUOW comes from Chaplin's Bellevue Subaru. Every Subaru is built in a zero landfill plant. Chaplin's Bellevue Subaru is newly remodeled and currently celebrating spring with the Subaru Love Spring event. More information at chaplinssubaru.com.
I'm Bernard Woollett. It's 10:28. Soul singer Chocolate Moore and ad man Cal McAllister join us to mull over the mood of the city in 20 minutes on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Okay, there's a little news for us all. Now we'll find out what's happening in the legislature because this is also a week for legislative news as well. And yes, you all know Ron Sims' phone number now. If you want to give him a call, you can find out what else he's thinking about. I think we got a lot in there. March 13th, or Wednesday, is the last day for the state Senate and the House to consider bills that started in their own chambers. The members are in the main body now debating the bills they will consider passing. The longer days for legislators, longer days for reporters covering the state legislature. Rachel LaCourte covers Olympia for the Associated Press. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for talking to us and telling us what's happening here. You know, behind all everything that's happening is something that's going to happen next week. The economic forecast due out March 20th, new numbers, a touch of reality perhaps settles in. What does that further date out due to the discussions this week?
You know, I think right now everybody is waiting to see those numbers. We've heard all different sorts of things. The House Majority Leader had raised concerns that the federal budget cuts could in turn impact us to the tune of an additional $500 million less than expected. But until we actually see the numbers, you're not seeing any definitive conversations this week about budget, just because they have such a firm deadline on Wednesday on trying to get these policy bills out.
So they are they're looking at Wednesday. What do we expect to see debated in the next few weeks? Controversial.
Even just today, we just heard that it's quite likely today that the universal background check bill will come up in the House for a vote. We saw a story this week in the Seattle Times reported that Representative Jamie Peterson said he was three votes shy on that bill. I spoke with the governor's office today, and apparently Governor Jay Inslee was making calls and talking to lawmakers over the weekend. He is in support of this measure, and it sounds like they may have the votes, or they're working toward it, because quite possibly this afternoon that bill will be on the House floor.
What does that mean for the bill overall? What's its status in the Senate? Anything?
Well, so that's the tricky question for a bunch of bills. You know, what is the status in the Senate? The Senate right now is controlled by the Republicans with the help of two Democrats. There has been mixed vibe on how this bill would do in that body, I think. But right now, how tough it is just to get it out of the more friendly House is maybe indicative of the challenges that it faces if it does indeed pass out of the House.
Lots of reporting, Rachel LaCourt, on the lobbying going on over those issues, over that issue. Do you see that? Do you see many lobbyists on both sides in the House?
I haven't personally seen. I mean, there's so many lobbyists here, and they're not all wearing signs saying who they are supporting. But it's been clear that lawmakers have been getting phone calls, mailers have been sent out in their districts. And I think that that's where lawmakers honestly are feeling a lot more of the pressure, their constituents calling and saying one way or another. They know where the lobbyists stand, and you know, they face these people every time they walk in and out of those chambers. But I think what's been more surprising to some of them has been the very strong feedback that they get from their constituents, especially on an issue that's as emotional as this.
So when did you say that universal background check might go up for a vote in the House?
It could be up this afternoon. Of course, that could change. We see things change here very quickly. They think they have the votes, and then maybe they don't. So they have a couple of days, but I can see why they may push it today just to try to get what I think is the most controversial bill to be considered this week, potentially, out of the way sooner rather than waiting to 4:45 on Wednesday.
Are there any other gun control bills that may make it out of the session?
You know, this is really the only one that has been discussed. I'm aware of, I'm sure that there have been bills that have been introduced, but I am not aware of any other one that has the potential traction that this one has. And again, traction with challenges. It's not clear that this will be voted out. If we see it come to the floor, they rarely bring a bill to the floor if they don't have the vote. So if it's brought to the floor, I think that we will probably see it voted out of the House. And if it's delayed, then they may have stumbled a bit in trying to get that support.
Rachel LaCourt covers Olympia for the Associated Press. The Senate's expected to vote on a measure to repeal the as yet unfunded law giving parents 5 weeks of paid time off to be with a new child. What's the status there?
You know, that bill could come up any time over the next few days, but it did pass out of committee, and it is in rules, and that is a bill that has strong support with the majority coalition caucus. Their argument is that, you know, look, we've had this law on the books since 2007. Nobody has benefited from it. You know, no one has received that $250 a week because of the budget problems over the past few years. It's been an easy program for lawmakers to delay and sort of kind of kick down the road. But for supporters of the bill who in the House had attempted to expand it, That measure never got out of committee, but I also believe that if the repeal passes the Senate, which I expect that it will, it is going to be in a very unfriendly territory in the House.
You know, that bill, as you said, it died in committee in the House. The bill to expand it died in committee in the House, rather. So the House doesn't have much interest in that. Is there anything that you've seen from the House or the Senate at this point that looks like they'll be revisiting any of these unfunded mandate issues? I mean, there's this one, there's some for education, or are they just going to clear those away?
You know, I think that when you're in a situation like you see this year where you've kind of got these dueling bills that are either crossing across the rotunda and ending up in either chamber or maybe don't get out of committee, but the House has made very clear how they feel, or at least House Democrats have made very clear how they feel about the paid family leave. They don't want it off of the books. They recognize that maybe this isn't the year to fund the program, but they feel like it's a promise that the state will ultimately fulfill, whereas opponents of expanding it and proponents of repealing the law say, look, this is unfair to be kind of having this promise hang out there that may never be realized. So I don't anticipate these unfunded mandates being taken off the books this year. There'll be discussions about it, surely, but I think right now the focus is going to be so strong on the budget and on funding education that this will probably be an argument, as often happens, that is kind of taken up for another session.
The Senate could come up with a vote for a bill that would give government workers the option of moving out of the pensions and into a 401-style retirement. Really, this is about the government trying to get out of these fixed pension plans. Is that going to get a vote? I mean, is that going to pass?
In the Senate, I anticipate it getting a vote, getting a very healthy debate, and yes, quite likely passing out of the Senate. But again, it'll be tricky to see how it fares in the House, just because labor groups are generally opposed to introducing more of these 401k style plans, because you know, they say the pension system offers workers more stability, and while even though this bill is giving workers the option, and there's a lot of focus put on that by proponents of the bill saying, look, someone has the option to do this, they don't have to do this. But then the opposing argument is, well, if someone makes a poor choice, they'll pay for that long down the road, whereas that pension would have just been there for them.
The bills will hit this deadline on Wednesday. So what are we looking at here? Bills die, or do they become bargaining chips?
A few things happen. So that 5 o'clock deadline, there is a sort of trick that I learned one day, super excited, that 5 o'clock deadline, you know, we're done with floor debate. Actually, they can start a debate at 4:59, and as long as the debate starts at 4:59, that debate could go for several hours. So some years that happens, some years that doesn't. So that 5 o'clock is that you just have to start that debate right before 5 o'clock, and then you can go for as long as that debate needs to go. And yes, bills, if they are not tied to the budget, which we haven't seen a lot of bills, too many bills tied to the budget, because we don't have an official budget plan from people yet, they will die at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. However, we've also learned that nothing is truly dead until the legislature leaves town at the end of session. There are all sorts of ways, different procedural moves to bring bills to the floor. Bills that never even made it out of committee can be brought to the floor by a procedure called the Ninth Order, which we have seen used rarely, but was used as recently as last year. So nothing is truly dead until all of these lawmakers get in their cars and drive home for good for the year.
I think I saw that movie, The Ninth Order, with Frank Langella as Dracula.
Band, yeah.
Yeah. So what are we looking at here that might still be surviving? For example, what's happening with the various education reform proposals that were making their way around the Senate?
Well, yeah, the Senate last week did pass a series of education reform bills. Some of them were not popular with Democrats, but then there were also measures that passed that were supported by Democrats. And so, you'll see, it'll be interesting to see. I think the education bills will probably be part of the bargaining chips at the end, because there is definitely, the focus is going to be so strongly in these coming weeks on not only education funding, but also trying to do some of this reform. So, you know, we saw the third grade reading skills bill passed last week, another one that would set up a grading scale for schools, A through F. The proponents of that, Republicans, have said, you know, everybody understands A to F. Parents should know where schools stand. But then opponents have said, you know, you could potentially damage a school for the long haul and unfairly label them as failures based on this. So it's going to be a very vigorous debate over some of these bills, but those are certainly still alive, and the House will have a bit of a debate on this.
Anything else still alive that has surprised you?
No, well, one that was of interest to me was one that passed pretty late on Friday night and had extraordinarily strong bipartisan support, and that's a bill on compensating those who have been wrongfully convicted. And that measure passed on a 95-2 vote on Friday night, and it now heads to the Senate. And basically that bill, we would join 27 other states, the District of Columbia, and the federal government with similar laws that basically pay people who have been wrongfully convicted for however many years. And so this bill would pay somebody $50,000 for each year of imprisonment and an additional $50,000 for each year that they spent on death row. It would also help pay child support and attorney's fees. And that is one that really seems to have strong support on both sides of the aisle.
And Rachel LaCorte, has the court ruling that of the unconstitutionality of the two-thirds requirement for tax increases had any effect on the speed with which some bills are being moved through the chambers?
No, well, not yet, because we haven't really, haven't had a budget plan presented. The Senate is technically supposed to go first. Actually, I spoke with Jay Inslee's office this morning, Governor Inslee's office. He's expected as early as the end of this week to release a package to close targeted tax exemptions and lay out priorities for paying for increased education funding. So when you see bills tied to those budget proposals and even closing tax exemptions requires a two-thirds vote, that's when you're really going to see that ruling put in action. That is yet to come.
All right, Rachel LaCorte, she covers Olympia for the Associated Press. I appreciate you telling us what's happening this week.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And Wednesday is the last day for the State Senate and House to consider bills that started in their own chamber at 5 o'clock. This is Weekday.
#10:42. What's the buzz these days in Seattle? The mood on the street, the zeitgeist. We'll take that up with soul singer Chocolate Moore and ad man Cal McAllister in a minute.
Support for KUOW comes from the structural engineering firm of Swenson Say Faget, with offices in Seattle and Tacoma, working collaboratively with architects, contractors, and homeowners, as well as public and private sector clients, to create effective building solutions. More information at SwensonSayFaget.com.
A decade after the U.S. invaded Iraq, a former soldier tells his own story.
I fell into literature because that can be the most effective way to communicate the complexities of any war.
The war in Iraq 10 years on, Iraqi voices, American voices, recovering from an experience they can never forget. Remembering next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
This afternoon at 1 o'clock on KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
Join KUOW and Seattle Shakespeare Company for Love's Labor's Lost, Shakespeare's comedy about how youthful idealism gets derailed by romance, March 13th through April 7th. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
-48 degrees in Seattle, mostly cloudy. Forecast calls for a chance of rain today with an afternoon high of 52. Then it's rain at times overnight with a low of 46. Tomorrow, Tuesday, breezy and rainy with a high of 54. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 10:44. A new international law to protect endangered sharks in the news at 11.
Now we head into the chat room, the water cooler, the zeitgeist, the Stammtisch, discussing some of the other stories this past week. Cal McAllister is CEO of Wexley School for Girls Ad Agency. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, sir.
I don't know where Chocolate Moore is, but when she comes, we'll talk to her.
Sounds good.
You know, you gave us a tour of your ad agency.
I did.
A place where work and fun seem to, you try to work towards fun.
We do. Fun plays a big role in our business, and certainly that was a goal that Ian and I set out to accomplish when we got started, and we knew we were going to spend, and most people spend more time at work than waking hours at home, so we wanted to make it an enjoyable place.
Do you think that idea translates to other workplaces? Do you have any doubt that translates to other workplaces?
I have no doubt that it translates to other workplaces. It's important, I think, for people to have fun and be together, and I really think that's what Marissa Mayer was trying to get at when she wanted people to work with her at Yahoo and have everybody together. I don't think it was about saying people shouldn't work from home, but most certainly I think you can have a good time with people you work with. You get more productive, you get better work done.
Do you allow, so Marissa Mayer, the executive chief at Yahoo, she decided to eliminate telecommuting for all her workers. And I believe in the end she also is going to show up at work too and not telecommute.
That's the hope.
Yeah.
That's the promise she's made.
A lot of backlash. Do some people telecommute at your place of work?
Well, you know, we actually kind of had a problem with it about a year ago or so where it was easy. We do if it's necessary, but we really, really discourage it because we're a collaborative place. And I think that's what she was getting at. And everything that we do, certainly everything I've done professionally has gotten better when other people have gotten involved. Thankfully. So we let people work from home if they absolutely have to, but at the same time, we find that we have a really considerate employee base. So we kind of find that if we have people waiting on each other, they don't necessarily reach out and say, hey, I was expecting this from you, and I thought maybe we'd get that from you. And as the time just kind of keeps on ticking, we weren't as productive as we needed to be. And plus, we like each other, and we want to spend time together.
It is interesting to think of that. The value of working together went away for a while. The idea of telecommuting seemed more democratic and fair. And yet, in some places, we see this issue. But can you see a situation where, you know, it's about technology, isn't it? Oh, well, I can Skype you, and I can be on the table in the speakerphone. It just doesn't work. In the end, it just doesn't work the same way. You don't get the same quality.
I don't think that you do, certainly in the way that we do business. Our business is based on interactions with people, whether we create them or whether we're having them live. And we just haven't found that Skype works particularly well for that. Now, we do have, I think that Marissa sort of let a couple folks down because she's a working mom, and certainly our family lives are more important than our work lives at Wexley and probably everywhere. So it's important for people to work from home when they have to, and then childcare and those sort of things are really taking the lead for a lot of people's motivations. But yeah, I mean, it just doesn't work as well for us. I mean, we work better together.
Cal McAllister is CEO of Wexley School for Girls Ad Agency. Chocolate Moore is an international singer and songwriter. Her newest album, To Whom It May Concern. It's good to see you.
You as well.
Do you allow telecommuting when you do collaborations with other artists and musicians?
You know, to be completely honest, that is the basis of work these days for a lot of musicians, honestly.
Putting up a track, sharing it with somebody across the country or the world.
With all the different track sharing sites and social media, and you don't get in the car for much of anything. You get on planes for shows, but other than that, a lot of times you're on conference calls and Skype. And
so how does that compare with when you first started in terms of working with other musicians?
Well, it's been just an increasing presence from the beginning.
How do you feel about it? I mean, is it a good thing to have so little contact with your collaborators?
I think honestly there is something missing when you're not looking at a person face to face in any level of communication. But it's, you know, kind of just the way of the world at this point. I think that, you know, this particular generation and the ones beneath it are definitely victim of a lack of interpersonal skills and things of that nature because of the reality that, you know, you communicate online. You don't, you're behind a keyboard. You don't really have as much human interaction. But at the same time, in a lot of ways, it's a lot more productive, a lot more convenient, a lot more efficient, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, there are pros and cons, I think, with it. I recently got a chance to work with two artists for the first time in a long time as far as collaborating in person with them in the studio, and it was a far more fantastic experience than I've ever had.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the underlying this conversation is this notion that we that for all the technology, in the end, perhaps it's just better to be in a room together and kick stuff around.
Yeah, technology is a fantastic substitute. Skype is how my kids get to see their grandparents, you know, regularly. They just can't jump on a plane from New York and Florida. It's just not that easy.
It's an enhancement to the relationship.
But there's nothing quite like the energy of either friends or coworkers in a room, you know, and musicians, I expect also you get to really jam together. There's something different than, but if you can't share tracks, maybe you'll never get there, right? So,
yeah, I don't know. It's a very interesting reality. I think that the truth of the matter is you don't have to be in the same room with other human beings these days to get things done. You just don't. Technology right. provides an entirely different vehicle with regard to communicating and, you know, getting business handled. But at the same time, I do believe that there's just something that's out of whack with the younger generations regarding, you know, being face to face. Now, when it comes to work in corporate environments, I think that's just a matter of whatever that company needs. And, you know, chances are you'll get more work done when you can kind of peek in on someone versus them being at home and taking lunch breaks to go and work
out. It's a values thing.
Yeah.
And it's a question of trust, but it's also a question of
efficiency,
maybe,
and effectiveness.
Yeah, I need to get better at that. I sent an email a couple of days ago that was supposed to be clear and concise and directive, and they ended up my staff had to have three separate emails to figure out what I was trying to say. So better off if I just poked my head out of my office for a second. I need to keep reminding.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's all these different skills. Yeah, that's great. You know, we asked these folks to tell us what they're thinking about when we come up with these suggestions. So Cal McAllister was thinking about this telecommuting. Chocolate Moore, to my surprise, and you will tell me I should or should not be, was thinking about the Pope quitting.
Yeah, the Pope quit.
Are you Catholic?
I am not Catholic.
Are you Catholic?
I'm not.
And yet the Pope quitting rose to the top of your mind.
It's just interesting to me that from what I understand about Catholicism is that, and regarding the Pope, is that, you know, that's a lifelong commitment. And some of my good friends are Catholic, and, you know, they're a bit conflicted that there's almost going to be a bit of an election when it comes to the Pope, and, you know, that one is stepping down and one is coming in, and what that means. It's the first time in some 600 years right. or something that that's occurred. And, you know, I know I'm not a Catholic, so it doesn't affect me personally, but it's just very interesting that he's like, you know what, I don't feel very good, I quit.
It is interesting, though, isn't it? Because it does have some effect on non-Catholics. Do you think of ways that, I mean, surely he's going to have ways how women are going to be treated within the church, which has an effect on ways how women are treated in this world.
I think women are going rogue.
they'll have their own conclave.
Yeah, I think that how any one person or organization treats women has no real effect on how people treat women in the world. Either you are someone who understands that we are all human beings capable of the very same things and that our interactions are based on compromise, needs and desires, blah, blah, blah. Or you're just, you know, an old fogey who thinks that you've got to be barefoot in the kitchen cooking me dinner. You know, there's no in between. You know, either you get it or you don't get it. So I don't know that it will have that big of an effect on how women are treated outside of the church.
It would matter to me, though, to see how they chose, who they chose, would it, and what the effect that has on how women are perceived. Would it have thought to you?
I mean, I think it's, well, I was raised Quaker, so I was kind of taught to find everything fascinating. this whole process of the selections and the different colored smoke, and they're going to go in a room and have a secret ballot. You know, they've tried to do a couple things in secret before, and it didn't totally work out for them. And as my dad used to say, I think this is kind of hard to put yourself in a different spot, but as my dad used to say, other than the obvious, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? I think that, you know, they've got a lot of things that they're dealing with, but this will send, you know, it's not just, we don't see as much of it here in Seattle, but all over the world, this will be hugely impactful, same-sex couples, right-to-life abortion, those sort of things. I mean, this is going to be, they've got to find somebody who's going to put a new stake in the ground because the Catholic Church needs to reinvent itself.
You know, we also come up with things that we're sort of curious about. Where are you from?
Detroit.
And you have kids?
Yeah.
Do they go? Are they school age yet?
2 and 5, kindergarten for my girls, 5-year-old kindergarten next fall.
Do you live in Seattle?
Yeah.
So are they going to Seattle public schools or private schools? Where are they going?
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot in the house, and I was a public school kid. My wife was a private school kid, so basically we're going to put faith in the system, and I believe in it. And if the teachers say your kids need something different, then we'll make a different decision.
And you, of course, went to public schools here.
I didn't go to public schools here. I went to public school in Southern California. My entire collegiate career was I went to TT Minor here, and then at about 6 years old, my mother moved down to Southern Cal. But
so I just want. Well, then this is from observer status rather than having gone through it. But what did you make of the a statement again, a study again that said, minority kids in Seattle public schools end up with more expulsions, more suspensions, harsher treatment for discipline problems.
This is such a...
No surprise?
It's sort of, you know, in this day and age, it's just, it's a continuing conversation. And I think the truth of the matter is a lot of inner city kids, you know, come from very delicate and vulnerable environments and situations, and they're not always receiving what they need to assist in, you know, behavioral issues and things of that nature. And it takes a lot more than going to the principal's office to deal with, you know, certain demographics these days. And I think that you are probably going to see a spike in, you know, behavioral issues within demographics where, you know, they may not have access to the same things as other demographics. It just boils down to the truth of, you know, what's at home. What's at home for you, whether it be two parents, two working parents, one person or a parent that's not working. You know, if you're consuming a large amount of television, if you are made to read a book every day, if you are physically active, if you have extracurricular outlets, you know, just all those things play into it. And in public schools, you do see a lot of children who do not have access at the same sorts of outlets for energy or frustration or whatever else as a lot of other kids. So in certain ways, I can't imagine a teacher not expecting a certain behavior from or having a very stock response to certain behaviors from certain demographics. Doesn't make it right, but, you know, if you and not to make any excuses at all, but just in being realistic, like, there's a kid that comes into class every day and gives me hell, and when he comes in, I'm sick of him already, and I'm just going to, you know, get him out of my class as often as possible so I can run my class. And so, I don't know. I'm not as surprised, I guess.
What do you think? Well, what does it do to what effect does it have when you're thinking about the public school system you're going to enter?
Well, you know, I totally agree with Chocolate. I think that these statistics, you know, what did they do and what were the causes? I think that we only know one thing, and that's the fact. And the fact is that there's not a clear balance. So what it's a sign to me of is that, as she's saying, that it's just an exhaustion. I think that teachers don't have the resources that they need. I think that suspension and expulsion is a sign of exhaustion, saying, I can't fix it. You're not helping.
Get them out of here.
I need you to jump out.
Yeah.
And certainly in the different demographics, there's a lot more resources, a lot more active PTAs, a lot more financial resources. So I think that's something that we need to look at versus just the facts that we're not treating everybody fairly. We need to find out why.
All right. Again, you folks around the water cooler, I appreciate it. You have a new album out.
I do. It's called Flies. It's called Fly. It features Music Soul Child and a hip-hop kid named Fonte, who's a legendary contribution to the hip-hop community. And it came out in October, and I like it, and I think you will too.
Available to people around the internets and physically?
Not physically yet. It is just digital, speaking of. It is available on Amazon and iTunes and just about any other digital outlet you can imagine. Spotify.
And you have advertising out.
I do. I mean,
what should we watch for? Name one thing to watch for.
The projections that we just did with the Sounders were pretty exceptional, I think, and the city is really getting behind them. So the work that we continue to do with the Sounders is something to keep an eye out. And the Home Street Bank work continues to roll out, and we're having a lot of fun right now.
Cal McAllister is CEO of Wexley School for Girls, an ad agency, and Chocolate Moore is an international singer and songwriter. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. This is Weekday.
The latest from the Vatican on the process of selecting the next pope. In the news in a minute. KUOW-FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from Best of the Northwest Art and Fine Craft Show, March 23rd and 24th at Seattle's Smith Cove Cruise Terminal on Pier 91, featuring 140 Northwest artists entertaining.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.